Hello everyone, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Everyday Black History. Happy Monday to you all, and welcome to the month of November. As we blow through this year, and of course all of us want to see 2020 in our rear view, as we blow through this year and be heading to the month of November, we can already see 2021 on the horizon, and I know we all hope that 2021 will be a much better and more positive year. We all hope, we are all hoping, and we are all praying for it. But happy Monday. I hope you had a great start to your week. I hope you had a great weekend. And as we start this week, we know that tomorrow is a big day, and tomorrow is Election Day. And we've been inundated with, you know, get out there and vote, get out there and vote, go vote, go vote. Election coverage, Biden, Trump, you know, Harris and Pence, you know, debates here, debates there. We've been, you know, bombarded with election coverage. And, you know, we do know that it is important to vote, especially for Black Americans. Our ancestors really did fight for the right to vote, and many died for their right to vote. So we know the importance of voting and having that political power through voting, and not just in presidential elections, but also in local elections, voting for district attorneys, voting for councilmen and assemblymen and senators and congressmen and women. You know, these are the people that, you know, represent, you know, our areas locally. So it's important to be active in those voting elections, because you know, the local elections is what affect us day to day. And you look at other groups, other nationalities that have that political power, it's because they are a respected and a large voting bloc. So we see the importance of voting. And so on today's episode of Everyday Black History, we're going to look at the suffragist movement. And we're going to talk about five women who were activists, they were educators, and they fought hard to get the right to vote, not just for women, but for all Black Americans. Now, these five women, they all deserve episodes all to themselves. And so we're going to actually do separate episodes in the future where we get into detail about each of these different women's lives and what they accomplished. But today, since we are, you know, doing an episode just talking about the suffragist movement and the fight that these women had, you know, or were involved in just for the right to vote, we're just going to cover all of them, just briefly cover all of them and talk about them and their accomplishments in fighting for the right to vote for Black women and for Black people in general. Now, when Congress ratified the 19th Amendment on August 18th, 1920, it gave women, American women, the right to vote. And it reflected the culmination of generations of work by suffragists of all races and backgrounds. Now, everyone knows the efforts of white movement, suffragist movement leaders like Susan B. Anthony. She's one of the most well-known. Alice Paul, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. But there were also lesser-known suffragists who were women of color, such as Mary Louise Baldwin, who was one of the Native Indigenous people. She was also a suffragist. Dr. Mabel Ping Hua Li, she was also a suffragist out of China. And Nina Otero Warren, who was one of the lesser-known suffragists who had a Spanish as well as a Native Indian background. You know, these women don't get the same amount of coverage as Susan B. Anthony, but they were still just as instrumental in working hard for women to gain the right to vote. But even though you had these women of color who were involved in the suffragist movement and who were involved in getting the 19th Amendment ratified, there were black women as well that played a huge part in pushing this forward and getting this done. But they unfortunately faced discrimination from not just from, you know, the world, but also from the same white suffragist leaders. Now, black suffragists came to the movement with a different perspective. They, you know, had to struggle for basic human and civil rights during the Jim Crow era. So they were coming there with much more that they had to deal with, much more than these white women had to deal with. And many 19th century women's right advocates, they got their political start in the anti-slavery movement. But they, not all of them were happy to see black men get the right to vote before they did. Even though they were abolitionists, they were against slavery, when it came to the right to vote, they weren't happy seeing black men get that right before them. So they started to view the issues competitively. And some of the white suffragists aggressively sidelined black women and their broader civil rights issues, issues like segregation and racial violence. They began to sideline them and those issues from the movement. And one of their strategies was to use their platform, their large platform, to perpetuate stereotypes that women of color, black women, were either uneducated or promiscuous. And this is a shame because it's supposed to be about unity. You know, these rights were supposed to be for all women. But as you can see, that wasn't really so. Now, even after the 19th Amendment was passed, promising that the right to vote would not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex, women of color, black women, continue to be barred from the voter's box in many states. And there were tactics that were used, like poll taxes or literacy tests, to keep them from being able to vote. And the suffrage battle continued for many, many decades. And it often, you know, occurred against the backdrop of intimidation and violence. And still, you know, many activists fought on, knowing that the right to vote was a crucial tool for changing the oppressive laws and dismantling racism that was so ingrained in the United States. Now, the five women who we're going to talk about, their resourcefulness and their persistence became instrumental in passing the 19th Amendment, and they deserve to get the credit as well as the respect that Susan B. Anthony and those of her kind receive as well. Now, the first one we're going to talk about is Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. Frances Harper, we'll just shorten it to that. Frances Harper, she was born in 1825. And at a time in America when the majority of black people were enslaved and women were rarely encouraged to have a political opinion or share them in public, Frances Harper became a genuine celebrity and even a gifted speaker. It's said that she was second only to Frederick Douglass in terms of being a prominent black American writer for her era. She was a poet, an essayist, and a novelist, and she frequently went on speaking tours to discuss different issues like slavery, civil rights, and suffrage. And the cool thing about it is that many of the proceeds that she received from her book, she donated to the Underground Railroad to help fugitive slaves. Now, as mentioned, she was born in 1825 in Baltimore to free black parents, and she received a rigorous education at the Watkins Academy for Negro Youth, which was founded by her uncle, Reverend William Watkins, who was an abolitionist and an educator. When she was a teenager, she began sending her poems, which explored different themes such as enslavement, abolition, and even Christian faith. She began sending them to local black newspapers and published her first poetry collection, Autumn Leaves, in 1845 or around that time. Decades later, her novel, Lola Leroy, was one of the first to be published by a black woman in the United States. And that book told the story of a mixed race woman who was raised white but then still sold into slavery. And that book addressed themes of race, gender, and class as well. Now, in 1850, she moved up north to teach. And during this time, she lived in a home that served as an Underground Railroad station. And by her hearing the stories of escaped slaves, what they went through, that solidified her activism. And along with the passage of an 1854 law that forced free blacks who entered into the state of Maryland from the North into slavery, that also helped to cement her activism. Now, imagine that you're a free black man or woman and you're from New York or up north, and you just happen to go down to Maryland for whatever reason, you can be forced into slavery. That was a law that was passed in 1854. So Frances Harper, because of that law and because of hearing these stories, she channeled her thoughts into activist writing and speaking. Now, when it came to the cause of women's suffrage, she was convinced that it would not be achieved unless black and white women worked together. But while she initially worked with white women suffragists like Susan B. Anthony and others, she was also one of the first to call them out in terms of their racism. She had a famous confrontation when she spoke at the 1866 National Women's Rights Convention, where she said, "You white women speak here of rights, I speak here of wrongs." And she called them out on their lack of female solidarity across racial divides. But as mentioned, we're going to do an episode on her because we want to talk a little more about Frances Harper and her accomplishments. But her activism helped move the needle a lot, in black history for the Underground Railroad, for women's suffrages and women's rights in general. And the next woman we're going to talk about, the next sister we're going to talk about, is a sister by the name of Mary Ann Shad Carey. Mary Ann Carey, born in 1823, her parents used her childhood home as a refuge for fugitive slaves. And she became the first black woman in North America to publish a newspaper, The Provincial Freeman, in which she fearlessly advocated for abolition. But you can imagine growing up in a home where her parents used their home as a home for fugitive slaves, you can imagine the story she heard as well. You can imagine the influence, watching her parents be activists in their own right and willing to risk their own safety for escaped slaves. You can imagine the profound effect that had on her, where it made her a fierce abolitionist. She helped to recruit black soldiers for the Civil War, and she even founded a school for the children of freed slaves. She taught school by day while attending law school at night, becoming one of the first black women to receive a law degree in the United States in 1883. And when the suffrage movement began to gain steam in the 1870s, after the 15th Amendment granted the vote to black men, she became an outspoken activist for women's rights, including the right to vote. Her legal and publishing background served her well in the fight for enfranchisement for women. In 1874, she was one of several suffragists who testified before the House Judiciary Committee about the importance of the right to vote. And in her remarks, she stressed the injustice of denying women, who were both taxpayers and American citizens, access to the ballot box. "The crowning glory," she says, "of American citizenship is that it may be shared equally by people of every nationality, complexion, and sex," is what she told the committee. And even though back then they weren't TVs, but I would have loved to have seen something like that on a TV. You know how they have these confirmation hearings and stuff, and these kind of hearings in front of the committees. I would have loved to see a woman like that tell them off, which is so accurate. The Constitution and all these written laws for this country talks about equal rights, but as we can see, they were denied us, and even now they were being denied black women the right to vote. Now, moving on, Mary Church Terrell. Now, I actually did an episode on Mary Church Terrell a few weeks ago. More than a few weeks ago. It was back in September. Mary Church Terrell, born in 1863, she was one who, fought a lot of the, she fought and dealt with a lot of the racism of being pushed out of the suffrage movement by white leaders. She was one of the black suffragists who founded one of her own clubs in cities across the U.S., as well as many other black suffragists throughout the 1800s, found their own clubs work on women's rights and women's right to vote. Now, along with church-based organizing, the club movement was the foundation for so much activism by black women in their own communities. Now, she was one of the co-founders of a National Association of Colored Women, the NACW, in 1896. And her, as well as Josephine St. Pierre Ruffin, became instrumental in consolidating many of the black suffragist groups across the country. And their agenda went just beyond, women's enfranchisement. It addressed other issues such as job training, equal pay, educational opportunity, and child care for black Americans. So it went so much farther than just the right to vote. They went and they covered so many other issues that affected black women during the time. And we still see today, but during that time, they covered so many more issues. Now, Mary Church Terrell, she was an educator, a writer, and an organizer, and she also focused her work on fighting lynching, Jim Crow segregation, and convict leasing, which was a system of forced penal labor. She was the daughter of formerly enslaved people who became successful business owners in Memphis, Tennessee, and she was one of the first black women to obtain a college degree in which she earned her bachelor's and her master's from Oberlin College. She was also the first black woman appointed to the Washington, D.C.'s Board of Education, and she led a successful campaign to desegregate the city's hotel and restaurants. In one of her addresses to the National American Women's Suffrage Association in 1898, she summarized her life's work with these words: "Seeking no favors because of our color, nor patronage because of our needs, we knock at the bar of justice asking an equal chance." So, Mary Church worked hard to achieve what she achieved and wasn't looking for no favors by doing it. So she's an example for us all. And the next one we're going to highlight is Nannie Helen Burroughs, born in 1879. And in more than 200 speeches that she gave across the country, she stressed the importance of women's self-reliance and economic freedom. She was a member of the National Association of Colored Women, the National Association of Wage Earners, and the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. And she saw voting as a crucial tool for empowerment and an extension of her lifetime commitment to educating African-American women. One of her lasting achievements was to launch and run the National Training School for Women and Girls in Washington, D.C. She also spoke on other things as well outside of the right to vote, such as addressing the lynchings of black Americans throughout the country. One of the most important things that black activists were concerned with between 1916 and 1920, before the 19th Amendment was even ratified, were the lynching and the white mob violence that were faced by black people in this country. So activists like Nannie Burroughs, and Mary Church Terrell, they saw the right to vote as a tool to create laws and protections for black Americans throughout the country. And finally, the last woman we're going to highlight is Ida B. Wells. Ida B. Wells, born in 1862, she's one of the most prominent anti-lynching activists and respected journalists of the 20th century. She owned two newspapers, and she was a strident supporter of women's voting rights. In 1913, she was one of the founders of the National Association of the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP. She also co-founded the Alpha Suffrage Club, Chicago's first African-American suffrage organization. And she, the club was also notable for its focus on educating black women about civics and its advocacy for the election of black political officials. She and her peers, as we know, faced racism. And as we mentioned, they were often sidelined by the white suffrage movement. When they tried to join the National Suffrage March in Washington, D.C., even in 1913, the movement leader, Alice Paul, instructed them to walk at the back of the crowd. But of course, Ida B. Wells refused. She said, "Either I go with you or not at all," she told the organizers. "I'm not taking this stand because I personally risk for recognition. I'm doing it for the future benefit of my whole race." So, you know, these five women, you know, as you know, Ida B. Wells, that last quote said it perfectly. They fought, you know, they fought not just for them, but for us all, for future generations of black men and women, future generations. They all fought. So, you know, as tomorrow is election day and everybody's talking about voting and election, in elections, you think about these five women and what they did because, you know, how they fought because they saw the importance of having that right to cast their ballot. And, you know, it's everybody's prerogative what they want to do, whether you want to vote or not, or don't want to vote, whatever it is. But when you think about our ancestors and how they fought for the right and how these women fought for the right to gain protections from lynchings, from mob violence, to gain better education and equal pay and things of that nature, they saw the importance and they were willing to fight and give their time and their money and their resources to see it through. So we want to just give props to these five women and for their sacrifice and for their fight. And, you know, as mentioned, since tomorrow's election day, we'll see what happens, you know, tomorrow, one way or the other. We still, as a people, have to, you know, whoever wins, you know, it's not like any of them is really going to do anything, you know, for us, you know. So we have to still, you know, work hard to better ourselves individually and as a people. And as we continue to go over Black history and honor, you know, people in the past and the present who have done things to uplift our culture and uplift our history, you know, today we just wanted to honor these five women who were mostly forgotten about history. We wanted to honor them and their sacrifice and how they saw the importance in casting a ballot. But that concludes this episode of Everyday Black History. Hopefully, you know, you all enjoy the episode. And you know, as mentioned, whatever happens tomorrow, you know, hopefully, you know, things will get better in the coming year. Because we still, despite an election, we still dealing with coronavirus. We still dealing with so many other things. So, you know, hopefully things will get brighter in the future. And, but until that, you know, until that happens, we'll still be coming at you with some Black history and, you know, talking about the past and the present. And the importance of highlighting our history and our accomplishments. So that concludes this episode, and we'll be coming at you soon with more Black history. So stay tuned.